Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 30th day of April, anno Domini 2016, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Apple took a more than $40 billion hit on Wednesday. I think that's $40 million hit. Might be billion.
That's probably billion.
It's billion. Yeah, it's billion. Took a more than $40 billion hit on Wednesday after reporting its second quarter earnings, and it was bleak. Shares of Apple were down more than 8% in after-hours trading at one point. Things went about as poorly as you could expect. The company couldn't hit revenue or earnings targets, iPhone sales fell off a cliff, and its third quarter guidance was pretty tepid. In short, it was not a good quarter for Apple. Here's the rub. Investors tend to reward a couple of things. Profitability is good. Meeting expectations is good. Beating them is even better. But for large companies like Apple, Twitter, Facebook, and Alphabet, growth is an absolutely massive part of the equation. And Apple showed that not only did its sales fall year on year for the first time in 13 years, its next quarter is also looking equally bleak, and investors panicked. That's the second straight quarter and a predicted three in a row where it's missed what Wall Street was seeking. Apple has historically been one of the strongest and most consistent growth stocks in not only the technology sector, but also the world. Previous to last quarter, it had 51 straight quarters of growth. It's basically a bellwether for the technology industry. If Apple is doing poorly, something must be wrong. But in the recent quarter, it became increasingly apparent that its growth engine, the iPhone, is stalling. Being a publicly traded company means that it's beholden to the whims of public investors who have their own agenda. It means that Apple can be susceptible to individuals like Carl Icahn, who on Thursday dumped all his Apple stock. All of it. Is this the end for the iPhone? Hardly. But investors need to stop hoping for continued growth as if Apple was some sort of never-ending Ponzi scheme. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Apple stock fell off a cliff. And your choices are, my poor Apple, they'll come back as long as Google's doing okay, and no idea why this is important. Sadly, I expect better of you people. No idea why this is important is the number one choice, followed by six people who think they'll come back and five people who say as long as Google's doing okay. And nobody says my poor Apple. But of course, I know you'll have more to say about this. So if you scroll down on the right under fascinating stuff, I keep forgetting that stopped working. The two finger scroll on my trackpad stopped working with the last update, and I just haven't bothered to go back and fix it yet. Under fascinating stuff, you'll find the forums is the first choice there, and if you select the second forum down is the poll discussion, and so far at least, the first item under the poll discussion is 30 April 16. Apple stock fell off a cliff. So far, we've got three posts, and we'd like you to join in and tell us what you think. And also, of course, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Sort of the big shame about this from a user perspective is Apple still made a boatload of money. They made $50 billion in the quarter.
Yeah.
That's more than almost any other company.
But it's less than it was expected.
Yeah, they sold 50 million iPhones.
That's less than right. they expected.
It's a huge number.
But Wall Street doesn't care.
They yep. don't care. What they care about is what did you do for me recently?
Yeah.
And what you did for me recently is you lost me money, so screw you.
Yeah. Even though you're still making billions of dollars.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You made less than you said you were going to make, and therefore I don't like you anymore.
I think I read that each one of Apple's businesses would be a Fortune 100 company if it was split out.
Yep.
Phones and computers and tablets. But Wall Street doesn't care. You know, what's your growth? Well, okay, they have 1 billion iPhones. That means there's 5 billion people that don't have an iPhone. Right?
Yeah.
So there's growth.
Well,
actually, in India, there was growth.
Right. In India, there was growth. Well, but again, when what you say to somebody is, well, in India, there was growth.
Yeah.
But that means in the rest of the world, there kind of wasn't. And India is not the big player.
Yeah.
Still, China is.
Yep.
Right. And China's going Android.
Because
it's cheaper and it has more.
They can steal it without anyone complaining because it's already free.
It's already free. And so, you know, Apple has in China, they're saying, and I don't know, I don't live in China. I haven't been to China. But they're saying that Apple has stopped being the status symbol it used to be. You know, a lot of people wanted an iPhone, and that's true all over the world, more for the status symbol than because it did something so spectacular. And that bloom is off the rose now, particularly in China. And so people are unhappy, are rather not buying the thing, and that makes investors unhappy. And that's why, you know, publicly traded companies are stupid. I'm sorry, I get that you want the money and blah, 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 blah. But the reality is that investors are idiots in general. They're only in it for themselves. And if they're not in it for the company. If you bought Apple stock a year ago, you made money.
Yeah. But if you bought it last week, you didn't.
You didn't. Or if you didn't make as much, they're more interested in how much money they're going to make.
Yeah.
So they can put their money in something else and get more back next quarter than they get for Apple. They're going to jump.
Yep.
Carl Icahn did. You know, and a lot of people just followed him because if Carl Icahn dumped Apple stock must be junk.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't know or care or whatever. And let's be clear, I'm not saying Apple stock is junk. I'm not saying Apple products are junk. What I'm saying is that's the way investors think. Is it right? Probably not, but it is the way they think.
It used to be the stock market was for long-term investing, and now it's, you know, day traders, yeah. you know, want to buy get in the morning and sell in the afternoon.
Yeah, hit it quick. Make a few bucks, get out, move on to something else.
Yep, yep. And that's what makes it so volatile, and that's what makes it a real problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we'll see more of this. We'll see a lot more of this, I suspect, and we'll see it continuing to be a real problem. I don't know what else to say about it except that cheese and crackers, it's
the way of the world.
Stupid.
Yep. And at least for those of us in the Apple community, the annoying part is this is true of every company, but Apple's the one that makes the news.
Well, Apple is the big one,
yeah.
And that's why, you know. And
Apple now. Before it was Microsoft.
Right, and before that it was Google. But
yeah.
Apple makes a bigger splash because it has such a huge effect on the market. And when you get a guy like Carl Icahn saying something, everybody mm-hmm. listens.
Yeah.
Everybody listens.
True.
So it's a real problem that really has no solution. As long as you're going to be a publicly traded company, you're at the whim of idiots.
Yeah.
Sorry, but that's just a fact.
Yeah, it's a fact.
Yeah. Your fiduciary responsibility is to maximize profits, not make good products or
Right. As I always say, if you are a publicly traded company, your customer is your investor. And the product they bring are the people who buy your stuff.
Yeah.
And so if you didn't sell enough stuff, you didn't bring enough product, and your customers are unhappy. That's how it works.
Yeah.
All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Walter from Greece, New York. Hi, Walter. What's up?
Hello there, Nick, Steve, and Dave. Nick, recently I was going through my folders and I came upon your newspaper article about a year ago, Encrypting Builds Trust in Clouds. And so I have a scheme that maybe might be workable. I'd like somebody's opinion about it, if you could.
Sure.
Okay. I use Ubuntu Linux and use the Nautilus file manager.
Yeah.
With the Nautilus, I can attach to connect to the server of this cloud storage company via secure web DAV.
Right.
Okay. Also, with Nautilus, there is a program or an application called CryptKeeper, which will make an encrypted folder.
Right.
You had a TV show for a while.
Pardon?
Wrong CryptKeeper. Go ahead.
Okay. With CryptKeeper. Now, you see, this is what I'm wondering. Can, if I'm connected to the server of the cloud storage company,
right,
you know, I can make a folder in there. I've done that. I've gone into there and made a folder. Do you think I could use CryptKeeper and make an encrypted folder on the server?
Is there a desktop interface to the folder, or does it have to be in the web?
This is a desktop. I'm not using any web application. This is web DAV. It's a secure web DAV. You know, it's in brackets. It says HTTPS.
Right.
But it goes that way. And I can move the files. I have, you know, opened up twice the Nautilus. I have my normal desktop. Hit copy. Then open up where it is my other copy of Nautilus and say paste, and boom, there it goes. And it takes a little while, but it transfers over into the server. So, and as I said, I've been able to go ahead through Nautilus, make a folder on the server. So I'm wondering, would CryptKeeper work in doing that?
Yes. Well, CryptKeeper works on any folder for your desktop.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
So it shouldn't be difficult to do, and it shouldn't matter one way or the other how it works. But what CryptKeeper does, CryptKeeper doesn't actually encrypt the folder. It assumes you already have an encrypted folder, and it easily mounts and unmounts it. The program you might be thinking of is TrueCrypt.
Okay.
Which has been
disconnected. Discontinued,
right.
The last version still works, but it's not being updated anymore.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. It certainly will work if you've already got an encrypted folder.
Okay.
Then you can use CryptKeeper to move stuff in and out of it without any trouble.
Okay.
It will facilitate encrypting and all that stuff. But as long as it's actually working, it means it's set up correctly and you can do all of that. So, yes, you can do that.
Okay. Does it make sense, or is this a little too much paranoid if I have an encrypted folder, then to make encrypted folders in that? You know, going really high, like 256-bit encryption with the folder, and then inside I have a 256-bit encrypted folder.
I do not understand the phrase "too much paranoia."
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't even know
what that's supposed to mean.
It would be best.
I saw, you know, I'm looking at your article, and you said that you were going up to RSA 4096.
4096, yeah.
It would be better if you use a different encryption algorithm if you're going to nest encryptions.
Okay.
One of the reasons you would nest encryptions like that is if one of the encryptions gets weakened. So if AES got weakened, someone might break your AES, and then inside of that, they'll find a blowfish. And so...
Right.
Once they break the first encryption, there's a second encryption level. You see that on you know, TV shows and movies all the time, is that there's six levels of encryption. Well, if you use the same encryption key and the same encryption protocol on each level, it doesn't matter.
Okay. All right. So AES on one and RSA on another.
There you go.
Something like that, yeah.
Okay.
And that brings another important point between transmission and rest. So when you transmit your files over the internet, you want them to be encrypted. On the web, that's typically an SSL encryption. When you're going to your bank, you get that little padlock icon. When you're saving to a cloud storage service, you know, say like Dropbox, it's encrypted while it's being transmitted.
Yep.
But then when it's at rest on their servers, is it still encrypted? And that can
be that's on you.
And that's a different option.
Yeah, and that's right. Where this server that I'm looking at, that they will give it at your enterprise level, but not at the freebie level that I'm looking at. They
right, so you have to do key. It. You have to do it yourself, and yep. I like that you're thinking of doing it.
Okay.
All right, we got to take a break. Back
Thank
in
you.
Just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 20 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Tom from Rochester, New York on the line. What can we do for you, Tom?
Hi, guys. Yeah, I talked to you last week where my live mail did receive one message, and then it just, like, freeze up.
Right.
It has continued. I reran the Security Tango again, and now I get a message. Says where my RSS feed support has failed. RSS feeds cannot be updated, and then I get a message that they can't send anything out because it doesn't recognize the sender. And then I get where my POP3 server has not responded. And then when I restarted after running the Security Tango, like the next day, I get this, it was a startup repair message telling me that the computer was unable to start and their startup repair is checking for problems. And that sort of scared me, you know, because I didn't know if that was really a Microsoft, part of the Microsoft system or not. And well, I was just wondering, would I be better just if I just upgraded to Windows 10?
Well, if you can't even start the machine, I'm sorry, go ahead.
All my Windows 7 programs and maybe just start fresh under Windows 10?
Well, Windows 10, here's the issue. It sounds like there's something not right with your Windows 7 installation.
Okay, I mean, I've been using this for ever since Windows
yeah, that doesn't
7
matter.
Came out.
It doesn't. It honestly doesn't matter. If there's something that's gone wrong with it, that's that's new. Here's the problem. If you upgrade to Windows 10,
yes,
you will bring along in the registry whatever those problems are.
Okay, I didn't know whether Windows 10 eliminates the registry or not.
No. Windows is married to the registry.
Okay.
But you can also do a clean install of Windows 10. The problem with doing a clean install is you have to then make sure you have backups of all the programs that you run. So if you know, you'd have to have the CD or the original downloaded file, or and you'd have to have whatever registration numbers you needed, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as you have all of that stuff, you can do a clean install of Windows 10. Make sure that you've, of course, at this point, if you can't boot the machine at all, if you want to make sure you've got good backups of all your stuff.
Yeah, you mean my data files?
Now,
were you saying your computer doesn't boot or the mail program doesn't open?
Oh, it's just about my, I use Firefox for internet, and that everything works fine there. It's just the live
just
mail.
Just live mail. You can start by deleting the account in Live Mail and then recreating it again. That may help, but you, as Nick was saying, you may need to reinstall Windows completely.
Well, again, now hold on a second.
It's just the Live Mail app that isn't opening.
Right. So if you go to outlook.live.com, your mail works fine.
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
If you go to outlook.live.com,
okay,
and log in with your Live Mail username and password, that works fine.
I just have an icon, you know, on the
no, that's not what I asked.
I guess, yeah, I've never tried to go to Outlook.
You should, because what I'm saying is that will help you troubleshoot whether the problem is with Live Mail the app or with it, something wrong with your Live Mail ID at Microsoft.
And I still can't get into Live Mail. I remember I couldn't get into it last week either.
Yeah, I know. But I can. I can go to live.com essentially. and log in, and it will take me to my mail.
Okay.
And so I know it's working. So if you can do that on the web through Firefox, then the problem is indeed that particular app.
Okay. Now, when you say app, you mean the icon on my...
Right, the program behind the icon on your desktop.
Okay, maybe I should just eliminate the icon and just go right to programs and go to live mail?
No, 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 that goes to the same place.
Okay, all right. I didn't know if that was a way to bypass it. Okay.
Yeah, no, that goes to the same place. So what you would want to do is repair your live mail.
Okay, and that's through that outlook.live.com?
No, I'm sorry. I'm clearly not being clear. So here's
probably me not understanding what you're saying.
Here's the deal.
Yes.
Windows Live Mail is a program on Microsoft servers. There are two ways to get at it.
Okay.
Via the web interface through Firefox or Chrome or Edge or whatever.
Okay.
And whatever browser. And an icon on your desktop.
Okay.
So if you go to it through the browser, that's troubleshooting, telling us if it works through the browser, then the problem is on your desk. If it doesn't work through the browser, then the problem is at their end.
Okay.
Right. So you want to go there using your browser, which tells us where the problem is.
All right.
If it's their end, you just have to get hold of them and somehow and have them fix it. But if it's at your end, then you can actually fix it.
Delete the account in Live. So open Live Mail and go into the account settings. Delete your account and re-add it. That may fix the problem as well.
Okay. All righty. Do you think I should have my computer technician do this for me?
Probably be easier, sure.
Yeah, yeah. I just don't want to mess anything up.
Yeah. No, probably easier and in the long run better for everybody if you let your tech do it for you.
Okay. All right. I didn't know whether installing the Windows 10 would solve the problem.
Well, likely not. As if it's not working here, it's probably not going to work after you upgrade.
Yeah. Okay. Because I was having problems even when I was running some of the Security Tango programs.
Yeah, you should have your computer tech look at everything, run the Tango for you, make sure everything is clean, and then see about fixing Live Mail.
Yeah, because last time he told me that don't use the super anti-spyware system or program. He said that because I had Microsoft Security Essentials. But then when I went to try to find where this Microsoft Security Essentials was, you know, I couldn't find it on my computer. But he did say I had it on my computer.
Yeah, but the thing of with the Essentials, though, just like everything else with Microsoft, they don't update it as much as Super Anti-Spyware and Malwarebytes do.
Okay.
Both of those programs are basically updated just about every week, if not a few times a day. So I'm sorry, nothing against your tech, but he is totally misspeaking there and saying that Super Anti-Spyware and Malwarebytes aren't good. If anything, they're better.
He probably has his own favorite.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, and there's no
problem. Everybody does.
But not to say use Microsoft. I'm sorry. You could use any other product. I'm not saying that, you know, there's not company A or B out there that might have a good product too. But what I'm saying is don't rely on Microsoft because they're the last ones to rush to doing updates.
And they're probably the first ones that the hackers are looking at, too.
Bingo. Bypass,
wouldn't they?
You got it.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I thought. That's why I continued to use the super anti-spyware program. So, all righty. So first step would be to go to that outlook.live.com.
Yep, and see if you can get into your mail that way.
Yep.
Okay, now can I delete my account through that? Or
sure you can if you want to, but you may not have to. Check that it's working fine there. If it is, you can leave that alone.
And then even if you delete it on the website, that won't delete it from your computer because your computer still knows it, will think it's there.
Okay, and it's pretty user-friendly?
Yeah.
Okay. All righty. I appreciate it, guys.
Yep. Have fun.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Yeah, it gets a little confusing when you have what's on your computer and what's on the web and what's here and what's there. I do understand that can be confusing, but you have to just stop and figure it out and think about it a little bit, and that'll help. I got to get a mouse for this thing. This is getting completely ridiculous.
I got a Bluetooth mouse with me if you want it.
I'll give it a try.
All right.
Thanks. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is our friend Carl from Pottstown, PA. Hiya, Carl. What's up?
Hey, that was quick. I'm having a little problem. I'm looking at my resource monitor on a Windows 7 machine, this desktop, and my CPU usage is 100%. So I shut down the machine, rebooted it. The first thing I did when it came back up was I brought up the resource monitor again, and immediately it's reading 100%. So it won't go below 100. What should I do? What's happening, do you think?
What operating system are you running?
Windows 7.
Have you danced the Security Tango?
No, not yet.
That's a right start. The problem, of course, for those of you listening, the resource monitor says how much of your system is being used at any one time. And there are a million things that will cause it to spike.
It should tell you what process is using all of the power as well.
Right.
And then, so that would be somewhere to start as to what that mm-hmm. process is.
Right. So if it'll tell you what the process is, but if the process ends up just being one of those generic process names, who knows?
Yeah.
But so it could be something completely innocuous. For example, there is a search engine built into Windows. And if that's doing an update, an indexing of your entire hard drive, well, that'll drive your system up to 100%. So there are some legitimate and innocent things that can cause that to happen. But it also can happen if you have been captured by some form of spyware, malware, turn your machine into a robot zombie kind of thing. So Dance Security Tango, that'll tell you whether the problem is malware of some form or if it's just a system doing a re-index.
Okay. You know, that may have changed because I was just playing around with the indexing function and the first time I ever did it, and I turned on a bunch of things under indexing that weren't turned on before.
There you go. That'll be it right there. Here's the thing. You can index everything on your computer, and that's kind of nice if you do a lot of searching inside your documents. Mm-hmm. But it means that your system in the background does a lot of indexing. And
especially the first time,
and that will drive up your system usage to 100% and spike it there for a very long time, depending on how much stuff you got on your hard drive, right? So I generally, because I don't generally search inside documents, I turn that stuff all off.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, if you want it on, then you have to accept the hit and just wait out the indexing.
Okay, is there a way to reset indexing back to factory defaults?
The same way you up them, you down them.
Mm-hmm.
Did that make sense?
There might be a set default button, but probably not.
There might be, but probably not. So the same way you started playing around with them and added a bunch, you just undo all the ones you added.
Okay, that sounds good. That's probably it, then. Thanks a lot.
There you go. You're welcome, Carl.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, sometimes when you play with settings, things happen.
Right. And they're not bad things. I mean, the fact that they happened is not necessarily bad. What is bad, in quotes, is that you may not understand the consequences of what you're about to do. And then when you actually end up doing it, stuff happens that you did not expect or did not intend. And that's a problem. I do not need that. What? I hate this machine. I don't care. I'm going back to my,
Sometimes the touchscreen is annoying.
Yeah.
Apparently always the touchscreen is annoying.
That was a bad touch. Bad touch.
It was a bad touch. On the screen, show us where the, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. If you don't understand what a function or setting does. Do some research before you click.
You think?
And remember what it was before.
And write down what it was before.
Or take a picture, a snapshot of it.
Take a snapshot of the screen, whatever you have to do that. There is a thing that system administrators create called a site book. SiteBook, a site book. And that tells you everything that's going on in that machine. Every time you change something, you update the site book. Every time you build a new machine, the first thing you do is create a site book for it. So you know what's in it, what changed, what happened, everything about it. Mainly that's so if you have to change something later or if you have to go back to something later, you know what it was. And also, if the machine dies, you can recreate it fairly quickly. Now, most people don't bother because that's a pain in the neck. But the reality is that you are your own system administrator. And if you don't do that stuff, nobody's going to do that stuff. It takes a few minutes to get it right or causes a lot of pain later if you don't. So that's your choice. But creating a site book is really a fairly useful and simple and workable thing. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. It's 40 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. The Supreme Court, you can give us a call, by the way, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. The Supreme Court has adopted amendments to a rule to give judges the authority to issue warrants to remotely search computers whose locations are concealed using technology. The proposed move has been criticized by civil rights groups and companies like Google that said it threatens to undermine the privacy rights and computer security of internet users. The top court has approved changes to the federal rule of criminal procedure, including Rule 41, which, with some exceptions, prohibits a federal judge from issuing a search warrant outside of the judge's district.
Do they go by NCIS? Gibbs Rule 41?
Gibbs Rule 41. I don't remember which 41. There's actually a website that lists all of Gibbs' rules.
Sorry for jumping in.
No, it's perfectly fine.
Good one.
The change in the rule was proposed by the Advisory Committee on the Rules of Criminal Procedure at the request of the Department of Justice. Remote searches of media or information that have been concealed through technological means may take place anywhere in the world, said Google in a filing to the committee in February last year. It pointed out that a magistrate judge in a court in Texas has denied an application for Rule 41 warrant to permit U.S. law enforcement agencies to hack a computer whose location was unknown, but whose IP address was most recently associated with a country in Southeast Asia. I want you to notice that now the United States is issuing warrants to search computers in foreign countries. The amendment comes into effect on December 1st unless Congress passes legislation changing it. Under the new rules, a magistrate judge with authority in any district where activities related to a crime may have occurred can issue a warrant to use remote access to search computers and other devices. Law enforcement will also be able to seize or copy electronically stored information located within or outside that district if the district where the computer or information is located has been concealed through technological means. The new rule provides for a similar warrant and investigation under the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act that involves protecting computers that have been damaged without authorization and are located in five or more districts. This provision could allow investigators to obtain warrants to search a large number of computers in many districts simultaneously if they are suspected to be part of a botnet or even if they are found to contain some malware or virus, according to critics of the provision. So if your computer has a virus in it, the government can now legally search it remotely. That's what the provision says. The definition of a damaged computer is very broad and could be interpreted, for example, to include software infected with unwelcome code, malware, or viruses, according to the Google filing. In the wake of the Supreme Court decision, the focus now shifts to Congress. New America's Open Technology Institute has called on legislators to block the changes, as they would for the first time explicitly authorize law enforcement to secretly and remotely hack into targeted computers of both suspects and victims alike. So is this a good idea or a bad idea? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. One warning, if you do call up and turn it into a screed or a rant about the current presidential candidates, we will just simply cut you off.
Yeah. I mean, that's so
That's not what this is about.
This is so wide, though, giving them such a broad brush. You could drive two semis side by side through it.
Well, yeah, and that's just it. Apparently, if the government suspects that your computer has a virus in it, they now have the legal right to go in and
it's
look.
It's just about any computer can have spyware or malware
That's right.
in it. Hello?
That's how the
right.
bad guys are sneaking in. Is
yes.
your computer slow? Give us a call and let us fix it for you.
Right.
We'll clean it right out.
Oh, the scams that are going to pop out from this?
Yeah. Yeah. This is the government. We think your computer is slow. Give us control.
Yeah. And give us
rule
all your
41.
Yep.
Isn't that the Nazi rule?
They are going.
No, I don't think so. It might be.
They are good.
Godwin's law.
I guarantee you. Hear me now. Remember me in a couple weeks. But I guarantee you, the hackers and phishers are going to have such fun with this, faking out folks right now.
Yeah.
You know, going on this Rule 41 that they think their machine is infected and that they got to pay, you know, a certain amount. I mean, it's going on now. And now to have this, you know, especially since it's been in the news, you know, and that they can go into anybody because they've got the right. They're the FBI. They can search anything.
Well, theoretically, they have to get a judge to issue a warrant. But you see that.
Yeah, how many elderly folks are going to know that?
Right. Well, and even on the other side, you see it on TV shows, and so they got the idea from somewhere. But does it happen in real life that some judges are easier to get warrants from?
Yes.
Yeah. So I think he's a criminal. All right, here's a warrant.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, and that's frustrating. Especially for something as stupid as a virus.
Or spyware.
Yeah.
Hello? There's a lot of spyware out there.
The NSA put the spyware on it.
I mean, some of it will just sniff where you're going and report back that, he's checking for car insurance.
Right.
So they send that information out.
Yeah.
You know, I mean... Oh, this is Pandora's box.
The Burr-Feinstein bill that's working its way through Congress. One of the drafts, a draft for discussion was released, and the law is so vague. It basically says that anyone that makes an encryption product must provide the intelligible content at a government official's request. Which means that basically any encryption, you know, you logged into your bank, the government can get that data. You know, you're making a phone call, the government can get that data. And they've tried. I'm trying to continue, but Nick is making it difficult. Here, let me point the camera down at you. The government can, and they don't differentiate what government. So it can be the mayor of your local village.
Yep.
Can require Apple to, for example, to break the encryption and give them the intelligible version, which is the word the law the bill is using.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone is saying this is just a really stupid.
Well, like I say, it's a very broad,
very broad
brush.
Too vague.
Oh,
every encryption you use ever.
Muddy water is clearer than this law is. I mean.
Sorry, my chair wouldn't go any lower.
We're wondering if you're going to sleep on the floor there, or, you know, broadcast from sitting down on the floor.
I may end up there. But yes, and this is just one more example of America turning into a bunch of scaredy cats.
Oh.
And that's the politest I can be on radio.
Mm-hmm.
We're just afraid of everything. Oh, somebody might be breaking a law somewhere. Ooh. Ooh.
Well, the problem is that the politicians use all the scare words. It's terrorism. It's child porn. It's organized crime.
Yeah.
So, right. Yeah, okay, well, Bill.
The Bill buzzwords.
Yeah, right, yeah, get all those scary buzzwords. So now when the first guy thinks his wife is cheating on them and uses this law to break the encryption on her phone, which basically has already happened.
Right.
What was his name? There was a security researcher that wrote an article, you know, years ago before cell phones got encrypted, which was because the government was spying on us. That's why all the companies put the encryption on it. Police had this box they would keep in their cars. And, you know, basically routine traffic stops, they would ask for your phone, and most people would just hand it over. And they plug the phone into the box in the patrol car, and it would suck all the data off in a few minutes. So while he's running your license plate and driver's license number, he sucks all the data off your phone. And now that the phone's encrypted, they have to ask for your password first. And,
right.
And that's where the problem is. But it's terrorism, and so we have to do it.
Well, that's one thing, though. It's become. I just saw that they're trying to get another law passed that the minute you're involved in an accident,
yeah,
the first thing they're going to do is request your phone, and you have to turn it over to make sure that the accident you didn't cause the accident because you were on it, whether it's calling or texting. Texting the biggest.
They already do that casually. But now they want to make it mandatory.
They want it mandatory.
That doesn't say someone else was using your phone.
Yeah, but what I'm saying
is your phone was being used.
I'm saying at a scene of an accident.
Right.
You know, that's what they're tying it to because they're finding more and more accidents. They're refusing to pay. You know, because, you were on your phone. Sorry, that didn't, you know.
Some clause in the bottom of your insurance statement.
Definitely. They're getting into writing that, you know, a lot tighter so they're covered. Because they're not going to pay out. If you were not paying attention to your driving, you're texting, and you run into something, the first thing they're going to do is check your phone records.
Yep.
That's all they got to do.
You could be doing hands-free texting, which is, by the way, legal.
Yeah.
Maybe not a good idea, but legal.
And there's so many other things that are so distracting, too. To my girlfriend had an old girlfriend a long time ago with my car because she was fiddling with the radio.
Yep.
And ran into the back of a truck. We should make passengers.
Ernie Kovacs died because he was driving his wife's car and was fiddling with the cigar lighter because he couldn't find it. It's an unfamiliar car.
Yeah.
Ran into a tree.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You should ban passengers because they distract you.
That's right. Cars should not have radios in them.
Thank God I thought I went deaf. My wife.
Right. No, some kids, teenage kids, they do that. I mean, with their driver's license, they're not allowed to, was it junior license now?
Yeah.
Can't have more than so many people in the car.
I said, you know, I've been driving since I was 16. And they go, even at night? I go, yeah. You weren't restricted? I go, back then, no. Once you got your license, you could drive.
Because we knew what we were doing by then.
You know,
we were more responsible.
I wasn't, you know, restricted. Like,
why?
Now they can only go up to, they call it a junior license. They can go and, wow, that must have been cool. I go, that's just the way it was.
It's just the way it was.
You drove.
Well, we've slowly become a nation of scaredy cats. You know, it used to be, well, let's head out west. Well, let's not do that. There's Indians and there's hurricanes and floods and big deal, we're going anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's don't get in your car if you're not 18 and then the sun is down.
Yeah,
because we're afraid somebody will sue us, because somebody will probably sue you,
right?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
It really gets the, by the way, there is no Gibbs rule 41.
There is
it
not.
hasn't been revealed.
Oh, okay.
Yet there's a 40. Rule 40 is, if it seems someone's out to get you, they are. And rule 42, don't ever accept an apology from someone that just sucker punched you. But there is no rule 41 yet.
Maybe the FBI made Gibbs remove rule 41.
That's certainly possible because they wanted it.
They wanted it.
Rule 41 has not been has not been revealed yet.
But there already is a Rule 41 in federal law. It's called the Voluntary Dismissal Law. So this is a different Rule 41.
Right, and of course there is an Internet Rule 41 as well.
Yeah.
He's not here now.
So the internet, in Internet Rule 41, the Urban Dictionary says Rule 41 is something needs more desu, no exceptions. And so you have the word desu added to everything. And desu is a Japanese word for it is, which is often said at the end of the sentences to seem cute or unwitting. Japanese are into cute. So if you say desu, you can say pretty much anything and say desu at the end, and it's supposed to be cute.
As opposed to,
yeah, right, like who cares? But that's Rule 41 in the internet. But yeah, so this is going to cause...
It's a reaction to the problems of today's world of terrorism and criminals, but it's an overreaching reaction.
It's a reaction from fear.
Yeah, they're going too far.
Yeah, it's a trigger.
As opposed to a reaction from bravery. Land of the free, home of the scared.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it is what it is. What are you going to do? But still, it saddens me.
Oh, definitely. You know, I mean, you know, that's the whole thing. We've become a nation, like you said, of such scary cats that all the terrorists have to do is mention that they're going to do something, and all of a sudden we're on alert. You know what? If it happens, it happens. You know, I mean, not that I'm going to, you know, be willy-nilly about it, but right. I'm not going to live my life right. in fear.
I remember reading one about there was a rumor that the terrorists were going to start renting scuba gear so they could sneak into piers, and so be on the lookout for anyone going to scuba shops.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and that causes all the problems that the Sikhs are having these days.
Yeah.
Sikhs wear turbans, but they're not Muslims. Okay, anyway, we're going to take, that's it. It's the end of the first hour. We're kind of done with 1 hour of the show, but we're about to have a second hour. Save us from ourselves and give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. We'll be back in just a few minutes with a whole nother hour of this nonsense. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is the top of the hour. And we'll be back with a whole nother hour of this nonsense of sound bites right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of Soundbites. And
you're having problems with that chair today.
Yeah.
I hate this chair now. Okay, we're back. And we have David from Stanford, Florida on the line. Where's Stanford, David?
No, it's Sanford. It's between Orlando and Daytona Beach.
Oh, okay. Well, and what's up?
I was looking to upgrade to Windows 10, and I'm running Windows ME.
Ouch.
Ouch.
No, not really. I'm running. I was listening to some of your older shows in the archive.
And you got me.
I just have a hoot on when people call in and say that they're running ME. Anyway, I'm running Windows 7 with the NAG screen, but since I installed Steve Gibson's Never 10, I no longer get the NAG screen plus the icon. And most importantly, I was able to bypass the install Windows 10 and get my updates, my Windows 7 updates.
Yep.
Which was really good. But then I was thinking, well, maybe I ought to at least look at Windows 10.
Well,
and, so I went for the install, and it stopped at 10% because of some driver issue. And it went by so fast, I didn't catch what driver it was.
Do you have a name brand PC, or is it a custom build?
It's a custom build.
Yeah, that makes it a little harder. What you need to do is go to the website of the manufacturer of all your hardware, motherboard, video card, sound card, network card, all that, and check for Windows 10 driver compatibility.
Well, yeah, but then, see, then I got to thinking that by having it stop at 10% and roll back, that should keep me immune from the forced getting Windows 10 forced on me.
Yeah, no.
And because I'm just so creeped out about the EULA, and when listening to you guys show about the subscription in the future, that's even worse.
Well, there's no stopping that. I mean, right now you are completely open to whatever viruses come over the internet,
right?
And that will happen until you're current. And at some point, current, if you stick with Windows, at some point, current will mean a subscription. So at some point, if you don't want the subscription, you have three choices. Remain open to problems that will arise everywhere from specifically security issues, as well as driver and other updates and blah, 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 blah. Or move to another operating system, or buy a new computer.
Now, I did burn a live CD of Linux Mint Cinnamon, and I'm really impressed. I'm going to go that route.
That sounds like a plan to me. How old is your machine, and what are the specs?
It's an older machine, actually. I've got 4 gigs of DDR2 RAM and a 740 AMD processor. It's a 3-core.
That's a pretty decent machine.
Huh?
That's a pretty decent machine.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. When I built it, it was supposedly future-proof, which is such a silly name anyway. It's more like a delayed upgrade. So it's a fairly good machine. I haven't had any problems with it other than a few window issues. But
Right.
And running the live CD actually seemed like it was running faster on using the disk than my Windows machine.
Right.
So,
well, and you find it to be even faster when you run it from the machine itself.
Right.
Right. So, if you're open to moving to Linux, Mint is a very, very good choice. And as long as everything you do works, I say go for it.
I do have one question on the Libra Writer application.
Yeah.
Well, that... if I were to write a resume in that, is that going to get dumped by the resume scanning software companies use?
No. Here's the deal with the various Microsoft
alternatives.
Microsoft alternatives, yeah. things like either OpenOffice or LibreOffice, which I think Mint uses LibreOffice, which is the newer version. One of the things that you can do is either set the default read and write to be Microsoft Office compatible, or you can do a save as and save it as a Microsoft compatible Microsoft Office compatible format. So you can save things as a .docx, for example.
Right. I saw that, but I wasn't sure if those scanning software, if they can detect whether it was actually written in Word or
No, they don't
or
care.
Or an alternative.
Yeah, no, no, no. It's a plain DOCX format, and it shouldn't be a problem. I used to use it all the time at work and do much the same sort of thing that you're talking about. It worked fine. The big caveat is fonts. You're really fairly restricted to the Arials and the Times Romans and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, I read about that.
Yeah. Those are the big caveats. Other than that, you can read and write Microsoft Office formats for Word and PowerPoint and Excel all day long. Not a problem.
Yeah.
And like I said, I used to work at a business school, which was very Microsoft-centric, and nobody ever had a problem with any document I created, and I used LibreOffice exclusively for decades.
Okay. Well, that's reassuring, because that was my only main concern. I was able to get my M-Audio sound card to work after some fiddling around.
Right.
And was playing a jazz CD, had a nice background on it. I was ready to hit install right then and there, but...
David,
I gotta check my backups and that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Make sure your backups are all working. Yeah.
And Microsoft does have a hardware compatibility program that will try to check your computer for Windows 10 compatibility. I wouldn't rely on it completely.
I'm skipping Windows 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, moving to Linux Mint is a good choice.
Yep.
I don't want to. I'm done with Windows. I was thinking about upgrading my computer, you know, change the motherboard and processor, because I have some DDR3 RAM just sitting in a box. And then I'm wondering, well, do I have to call Microsoft and say, is it okay if I upgrade? And what's the new number? And, you know, with Linux, you just do the upgrade. And
Right. As long as and you're doing this exactly right, David. You download the live CD, you play with that for a while, make sure everything works, maybe write down what you did to make your sound card work so it's easier to do the second time, all of that stuff. And once that's done, when you want to make the move, you just press the button, wait till it installs, do that fiddling around thing again, and you're done. You got it. You got it made.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Good for you. Let us know how that works out for you.
Okay, I sure will.
And don't forget to tell every single person in Florida how great this show is.
Oh, I do. I tell everyone.
That's what I like to hear. Thanks, David.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
And one of these years will actually be the year of Linux.
One of these years.
If we keep saying it every year, one year will be right.
It's been the year of Linux for quite a number of years because Chromebooks run on Linux.
Yep.
Linux computers run on Linux. And, oh, by the way, Macs run on Unix as well.
And then Microsoft just added, you know, Unix Bash to Windows 10.
Right.
So everyone just run Unix.
Everybody's just running Unix and don't even know it. All right.
No, I like Chrome.
And that's a Unix underneath as well. So we're all good.
Oh.
According to Reddit, the first year of Linux was 1998.
Yep. There you go.
And we're still working on it.
All right. Back to the... And most phones run on Linux because Android is a Unix, a Linux core underneath. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. pardon me.
It's all right. You get choked up when you call us, don't you, Steve?
I do.
I understand.
I have an irritating issue with my new laptop, Windows 10 installed, that I can't find anything on the internet about.
Yeah?
So, I am working along fine, maybe listening to some music off of YouTube, and my screen goes blank. I can hit any key, and I have to log back in again. If the music was playing, it's still playing in the background.
Yeah, that's the screensaver turning on.
But screensaver shouldn't turn on if I'm... I'm using the computer.
Right. It shouldn't turn on if you're using the computer.
Well, you using the computer means typing on the keyboard or moving the mouse.
Yeah.
YouTube playing in the background doesn't count.
It was just that it's not a complete sort of sleep mode, I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Right, you guys. Yeah, the screensaver turns on, and then sometime after that, the computer will go to sleep. You may want to check your screensaver settings. Maybe it's accidentally been set too low. So it's like a minute. You know, you're reading an email, a minute passes, and your screensaver turns on.
Okay.
And then in that screensaver setting, there is an option to require a password when you come back in. Okay. Generally, that's a requirement in businesses. So when people get up and walk away from their computer, someone else can't come in and sneak into their computer and see what they're doing. For home users, it's annoying.
Right. Well, I do actually have it set like that because it's my laptop and I travel with
yes,
it.
Yes, yeah.
But I, I'm going to say it's not the screensaver unless it's triggered by a different thing, because I'll be sitting here. I've been sitting talking to you guys. I've been listening to your show. I'm just not doing moving my mouse or my keyboard. It hasn't gone to sleep. I could be typing on a document, creating a document. The screen goes black. I got to log back in again.
Check. I got a thought. I had a thought. It was lonely and fleeting, but I had it. There is a hotkey for screensaver in Windows 10.
Sometimes there's a mouse corner, too.
And a mouse corner. And so if the mouse corner is set and you shove your mouse over in that corner, it automatically, instantly will go to sleep. And that overrides everything.
Okay.
So you want to check in your mouse settings if you've got the hot corners, I think they call it.
Sometimes, yeah. And it may be in the screensaver setting, too.
Right. It might be in the screensaver setting. And also, there's an F key, F12, F11. I don't remember what it is off the top of my head, I'm afraid. Win-L might be it for lock the screen. Win-L. For lock the screen. So if you have accidentally, while you're typing, for example, you go to type an Alt L, a capital L, a function, some other L, and you accidentally hit the Windows screen key, which is generally under the Z on the keyboard.
Yeah.
Or if that key in particular is stuck, you hit the L, you will lock the screen instantly. The other thing is, if you're one of those people who rests the heel of your hand on the computer on either side of the mouse of the touchpad,
right?
That particularly on the newer laptops, the cases are much cheaper than they used to be.
True, true, true.
And they are, and pressing your heels down on there will warp that because they're not as thick as they used to be, and they don't have the support underneath that they used to have. So on the newer ones, you remember the old Toshibas and IBMs and Lenovos were built like tanks.
Yeah, much cheaper.
Now they're built like balsa airplanes. Huh. And so consequently, you may be stressing the keyboard or enough that it's registering that Windows key.
Okay, well, I will keep looking or following your suggestions. I'll look around and I'll try to be more aware of where my hand is when that happens.
Right, and check the corners, the hot corners, to see if you're setting it up there.
Yeah, I normally turn all that kind of stuff off, but okay.
Check it, can't hurt.
Thank you very much. I know you got to go to commercial.
Yep, we do. Thanks. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco. You, 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites member supported Jazz 9.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Wright.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And in the meantime, we'll talk about, the Apple Music app. Apple rolled out an update to its music app on Thursday, which allows Android users to access thousands of music videos for the first time. In addition to that, the company launched on Android its family subscription plan, giving up to 6 family members the option to access Apple Music content for $15 a month instead of paying $10 a month for each single user. Both features were previously available only on iOS. A beta version of Apple Music for Android was first introduced in November of 2015 with some limitations. An update released in February of this year added the ability to store downloaded songs onto SD cards. In March, another update added yet another feature not supported by the iOS version, the ability for users to add an Apple Music widget to their home screen. While certainly worth mentioning, these were minor changes compared to the ones that were announced this week. Giving Android users access to the music video catalog could help Apple compete in an arena where rivals like Google Play Music and Spotify have so far had an edge. A good selling point could be, in particular, the ability for users to access content not available on Spotify, like Taylor Swift's discography, or produced exclusively for the service, like a biographical series about Dr. Dre, which is reportedly in the works, or music docu-series The Score. So is access to iTunes videos important to Android users? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
One of the things the Android community was afraid of when Apple bought Beats is that they would lose the Beats radio that they've been using under Beats. Apple rolled it into Apple Music. So now if you were using Beats radio on Android, you still can now with Apple Music.
Right. But this is also something that to go back to our lead story, this is also something that the investors are saying, well, Apple is conceding the space. It used to be that if you wanted the stuff that's in iTunes, you had to have an iPhone. And now to get the full experience. And now you do not. It's Apple capitulating and admitting that they're never going to be number one and that they have to open up the other market.
Or it's Apple realizing that there's a billion other customers they can sell to.
It's exactly correct. That is exactly correct. We go right back to most investors are idiots.
Yeah.
And that, you know, again, it's investment out of fear. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Penfield, New York. Welcome, Larry. What's up?
Well, I've got two problems, the most urgent of which is I've got an Asus laptop with Windows 7 on it.
Yeah.
And it periodically goes into turn mode where you can't do anything. And if I go into the Process Explorer, I look to see what's going on. A lot of idling first. And then after that, the post process for Windows services is taking about 25% of my CPU and about 1.5 million bytes of memory. And the only thing going on underneath that is a task scheduler engine. And under that is something called ATK OS D2, which is an Asus routine.
Yeah, the problem is that host services are used by so many programs, it's almost impossible to know which one is doing it.
Even though underneath it's only got this one program here, the Asus program?
Yeah, the problem is that hold on a second. Let me back up a little bit. You say it goes into churn mode. Does that mean it slows the machine down, or...
Well, it means I can't do anything. It's sort of locks everything up, and I think it's out of memory or something.
How much memory do you have in that machine?
I should know, but I don't.
Okay, you need to find that out. If it's less than a gig...
Oh, it's more than
actually,
that.
Actually, if it's less than 2 gigs.
It's at least 2. It might even be 4.
Well, if it's less than 2, check and see. If it's only 2 gigs, maybe you can up it to 4. The other question is not the memory, but the amount of hard disk space you have left.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those, if they are very low, will cause that kind of churn. Also, the amount of memory you have... the number of programs you keep open at once or the number of tabs you keep open in your browser have a lot to do with how much memory you need.
Yeah, I know that's a problem. I'm continually having to close windows and tabs and whatnot.
It sounds like you need at least more memory, if not also clean up your disk space.
Hmm.
So those are things you need to look at. Figure out how much RAM you have. If it's less than 2 gigs, you really need to up it to at least 2, and honestly 4 if you keep more than a couple of programs open at once.
Even 8 if you can.
Or 8 if you can. It depends on your laptop, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Up it, and I know that means you're going to spend money, but RAM is not terribly expensive right now, so this is a good time to do that. And the other thing to do is to check to see if how full your hard drive is. If it's very full, take a look in the temp and TMP folders to see if there's a bunch of stuff in there you can delete or whatever. Maybe
get rid of those cleaned out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But check the size of your hard drive, how much space is left on that as well. But it really, to me, sounds like the problem is RAM. So figure out how much RAM you have and look at increasing that. Take it to your local reputable dealer and figure it out.
What percent of my hard drive should I have left to not be a problem?
Depends on the size of the hard drive. Mm. You know,
we used to say 10%.
I beg your pardon.
We used to say 10%, but yeah, then more, you get a terabyte hard drive. You don't really need 100 gigs free.
Right.
But 10% is a good benchmark.
2.5 times your RAM is a minimum. So if you've got 4 gig, you want 10 gig free.
Okay.
You know?
Another question has to do with this wireless mouse fix.
Yeah.
They came out with. I've been waiting that for a long time because I've seen it earlier as a problem, but this is the first time I've seen a solution. But when I go in to find out what file to update, my display doesn't look anything like what's described in the information. Nowhere in there I can find anything that says anything about the wireless mouse fix.
Right. You also need to figure out which version of Windows you're looking at, because often when you look for things on the web, they're talking about a different version of Windows. So if you've got Windows 10, all those Windows 7 screens are going to just confuse you. Similarly, vice versa. So you got to be careful that you're on a page that's actually about your version of Windows, and in fact has something to do with your brand of mouse, because often where they lead you to is the driver for that particular mouse brand, and those will again look different across multiple brands.
When I say check for updates and I look through the list of updates, it's all kind of generically named with just a KB number, and it doesn't really say what they're for, and none of them seem to correspond to the KB for the mouse fix.
Yeah, you have to go on Microsoft's website to see what the KB actually does. And do you have a Microsoft mouse?
Yes.
All right, well, then that's good. But it also depends on which Microsoft mouse you have. They make several.
Yeah, I think it's a 3500.
Yeah, make sure you have the... you not only have to have the correct hardware version, the correct driver for your specific hardware mouse, but also for your specific version of Windows. So, for example, if you have Windows 7 and the 3500 mouse, the Windows 10 driver for the 3500 mouse won't work.
Hmm.
So you need both. You need everything to match before you can download that. And generally Windows gets it right, but not always.
So when you go into Windows Update and it lists updates that are available, that wireless mouse update doesn't necessarily show up there?
Right.
Hmm.
That's exactly right. And
a lot of times those updates are just for the Windows operating system, not for other programs.
Right. They're not for peripherals, just for the operating system itself.
Oh, I see. Okay.
There is usually there was a checkbox in older Windows. I don't know about Windows 10 yet, where you could say look for other Microsoft programs. So
right.
Windows Update would also do Microsoft Office,
right,
which used to have its own separate updater.
Right, but you also need to make sure that that mouse has, that you're not using a generic driver for that mouse in the machine itself. Because if you are using a generic driver, then Microsoft will never update the mouse to the specific one because it doesn't know you've got that specific one.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, and because not everybody has a wireless mouse, it may not be part of the standard update.
Okay. Very good. Well, I guess I've got my homework cut out for me.
I'm sorry, but yeah, you do.
The wonderful thing about standards is there's so many of them to choose from.
Right, right, right.
All right, thanks, guys.
Yep.
Have a good day.
You too. You too.
And it may be that your specific mouse is not affected by this specific mouse bug.
Could be.
I'm trying to find a list of what mice are affected. And, of course, it stalled halfway through opening the webpage.
Yeah, right. And that's the other problem. It's just I went to some places yesterday. I was working, and I was going to some places that just were not cooperating.
Hmm.
You know, and it wasn't my machine because sites opened up just great.
Yeah.
But there were a number of sites I went to, and I don't know if there was a general problem on the internet or what it was. Cause I didn't bother looking at news this morning. But man, oh man, was I slow going to some places.
Some parts of the world get slow down and others
don't.
That's
exactly right. Somebody was having an issue.
Well, that's the thing. A lot of folks don't realize that. You know, when they click on a website, because just of our state of mind, we don't think that it, you know, could be halfway around the world and what it took to get to that website.
And there's hundreds of things on that page that it's downloaded to your computer.
your connection just doesn't go, say, if you're a local provider, from here to that website. It's got to be routed through so many different various routers and areas. And it could start out west, come back east, go down south, come back up north.
We sometimes joke that those of us that know how the internet works are just constantly amazed that it still keeps working at all.
Yeah, that's the truth.
That's no lie. Definitely.
You know, the basic concepts are 40, 50 years old. And what was the biggest foresight was... When we send out a TCP packet, it's okay if it doesn't make it to the other end.
Yep.
And how did they have the foresight to see that? Well,
more importantly, and this, there were four guys, Bob Metcalf and three other guys whose names I don't remember. And the other brilliant thing that they did was they had the foresight to make Ethernet a radio protocol. Every radio signal has a carrier.
Right.
If you are doing wired Ethernet, the carrier is the copper wire. So when you go to wireless Ethernet, no change. You just change the carrier.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, it's identical. So when they went from one, for you know, because back in the 60s and the early 70s, who was going to have wireless? First, it was going to have networking anyway. If you did have networking, it certainly wasn't going to be wireless because that was very expensive. But that's the protocol they used. And so when wireless came along, it was just a matter of, okay, we just changed the medium.
Yep. It's already in there.
And for our previous caller, it looks like the Microsoft Wireless Mobile Mouse 3500 is one of the affected mice. I've posted a link to the manual update instructions as well.
Hmm. Cool.
So you can download the KB manually and install it. But you know, Nick might be right. He might not be using
what?
He might not be using the Microsoft driver.
We better write this down. Updating.
Right. That's exactly right.
This day in history.
Right. There we go. I also just set my I don't know. I'm very upset at this whole Windows 10 thing. I can't get the drivers I need. I can't get anything I need. Listen, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 40 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And you should give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-966. 5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
I've got to give that guy from Florida, though, a couple kudos on that one. He got me.
How?
Well, when he said he had Windows ME. Smart.
I wonder if you could upgrade from ME to Windows 10.
No.
You'd have to buy the full install. You don't qualify for the free upgrade.
No, you really just want to do it. You just want to do it.
Yeah, we had a customer call this week looking to upgrade his PC from XP. He's finally succumbing to the fact that he can't use XP anymore. And said, I want to upgrade it to Windows 10. Well, bring it in, but I'm guessing you'll need more RAM, a bigger hard drive, and a faster processor. So we can wrap that all up in a new computer for you.
Yeah, right. Really, the only thing you're missing is a case.
Yeah.
We just have a lot of people who will talk about that. You know, I just want to do the least expensive upgrade that I can.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not going to happen.
And then you throw it away and buy a new one in 6 months.
Well, that's exactly right. And I get that. And I'm seeing the pain right now. I bought a very inexpensive laptop to teach one specific class. Mm-hmm. And now I've upgraded to Windows 10, and the mouse pad scroll doesn't work. The only thing that doesn't work is the scrolling, but it doesn't work. Hmm. And I can't get it to fix. So I just have to actually sit down and do it as opposed to trying to do it during commercials. But, excuse me, underwriting. But, all right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Howard from Irondequoit, New York. Why, Howard, what's up? Howard?
Okay, thanks, guys, for taking the call.
Sure.
I keep getting this notice on my unit, PowerShell has stopped working. What is it? Do I need it? And I don't know.
Well, PowerShell is a, when you go into a command line, right, the DOS command line, back in the day it was just DOS, but recently Microsoft has added something called PowerShell, and PowerShell has more features and better abilities.
More power.
It's a little closer to the Linux command line. Of course, Windows is giving up and putting the Linux command line into Windows. But generally speaking, and I hate to be the one to be the bearer of this news, PowerShell has stopped working is caused by a virus.
Okay.
So my suggestion, obviously, dance the computer, the security tango, clean that machine out. There's a virus called POWELIKS, POWELIKS, but I don't know what it's, how you pronounce it. That causes that to happen while it's doing other things. The error message is wrong. PowerShell hasn't stopped working. It's just been taken over by this virus. Right. So it's not. Anyway, you need to clean out the machine. You need to dance a security tango. Make sure the thing gets cleaned out. If you don't feel like you want to do that, take it to a reputable vendor. They will, of course, charge you, but they'll do a fine job, I'm sure. And so get that machine cleaned out one way or the other.
Okay. And that's something I do need, though.
Pardon?
That is something I do need. I do need the PowerShell.
Well, whether you need it or not, you've got a virus. You want to clean out that virus one way or the other.
And it's built,
right? Because it's doing bad things underneath your system.
And it's built into Windows.
And PowerShell is built into Windows. What you're seeing is a symptom. Whether you ever personally use PowerShell or not, Windows uses it, and it's a symptom that you have a virus. It's like saying, well, I've got gout in my left foot, but I don't use my left foot much.
Okay, well, all right, then I guess I've got to go onto your site and get that security tango and work that.
SecurityTango.com. There you go.
Yeah, I only use my left foot half the time, so I guess.
So really, it's not that big a deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, so anytime you've got a virus, you want to get rid of it. But in addition, Windows does use the PowerShell underneath for some things, and there's a lot of stuff that goes on there. So you definitely want to make sure that gets used, that gets fixed. there's no substitute for having a good clean machine.
Unless you like it dirty.
Unless you like it dirty.
Thank you for clicking on an ad.
Yeah. Isn't that? I want to see it too.
Yeah, and that's it. There you go. Clicking on the green light.
So Greenlight added a 500 megabit intermediate service.
Right.
Tier. So if 100 is not fast enough and 1,000 is too fast, now you can get a 500.
Right. Or if you want faster than 100 megabits but don't want to spend $100 a month, you can spend 75.
Yeah.
That's how that works. So, it's Greenlight, as we mentioned before, is the local fiber company. We don't have any other choices,
fiber.
I think.
There's a couple of commercial fibers in town.
But residential fiber. Yeah. And the big problem, of course, with Greenlight is they're only one company, so they can't get to every neighborhood at once. Every time somebody talks about Greenlight, the first 100 responses are, when are they coming to my neighborhood? Yeah, they'll get there. They just aren't there yet.
Security Tango just had its 12th birthday.
Yes, they did. Yes, we did.
Six days ago.
That's right. Yeah. Last Sunday, I think it was, right? 6 days ago? Yeah. The Security Tango has been up for 12. The site has been up for 12 years, which means we've been talking about the Security Tango for 13 or 14 years now.
At least, yeah.
And so it's still up. It's still working. People still go to it fairly regularly.
Unfortunately, it's still needed.
It's still needed.
Created back in a time when every other answer was, download this program and clean your malware. Download this program and clean your malware.
Right. And it gets a little more convoluted every time. The Android Allemande is still pretty simple. The iPhone Pavan is still pretty simple. The Windows Waltz is very complex.
Yeah.
Very, very, very complex.
And what we've been seeing lately is the threats have been changing, and I kind of describe it as the bad guys are getting lazier. They've always been pretty lazy. Something we've called script kiddies over the years. People that don't even bother writing a virus, they just buy someone else's and follow the script. But now they're getting even lazier. They're not even bothering to write the virus or to buy someone's script. They're making an ad that says you're infected with a virus.
Right.
And they're tricking enough people to make lots of money off of it.
Right. The problem is, and people are always telling me, well, do we still need the Security Tango? Well, the problem is the viruses, like the one that likely is infecting Howard, is ancient, but they're still floating around. These things don't die. Nothing ever dies on the internet. So viruses that are 5 years old, 10 years old, heck, 25 years old, back 30 years old, back older than the Security Tango. Somebody, we had it for a reason.
Somebody found a disk and stuck it in their computer to see what it does.
Or you just happen to get caught by something that's been floating around for 30 years.
Yeah.
So the Security Tango is still relevant because the problems are still out there. And again, you have different set of problems whether you have a Windows machine or a Linux machine or a Macintosh machine, you still have viruses, you still have problems. The same is true for iPhones and Android phones, and obviously tablets, the same thing. The only one that so far, has not had a problem are Chromebooks. So that's one of the reasons so many people buy Chromebooks for family members, particularly older family members and indeed younger family members, where 99.999% of what they're going to do is out of the browser anyway.
And it can be amazing on how much detail these fake messages know. We had a customer this week, the window popped up, Time Warner Security says there's a problem in your Macintosh and Safari's not running properly. Well, all of that is in your browser header that you've told the other end what programs you're running. And so that doesn't mean that Time Warner really called you.
Right. That's exactly right. Yeah. All right. We're going to take a quick break. It's 54 minutes after. No, we're done.
A really long break.
We're going to take a really long break. We're going to take a 166-hour break. That's it. We are done. This show is done for the week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Time sure does fly when you're doing computery stuff on the radio. Don't go away, though, because George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow, and we'll be back in just 166 hours, a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known and even unknown universe. It's Soundbite, right here in the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.